From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know as the West collectively tries to survive the summer, or dare I say, the entirety of the Northern Hemisphere. We have good news. This may well be the coldest summer of the rest of your life. We're so glad that you decided to spend some time with us this evening. We're excited. We're fans of you, fellow conspiracy realists, and that's why this is one of our favorite times of the week. It's when we get to hear from you. This is our weekly listener mail segment. We are going to learn about some heist in the world of trading cards. We're going to talk about something that that fascinated all three of us in the world of trading cards. You could say it has a ring to it. And we're also going to hear a great anonymous letter explaining some of our questions about the Tupac investigation. That's true. We're going to hear about some inspiring / hilarious billionaire hobbies. Before we do any of that, we are going to follow up on an earlier promise from the week previous where we wanted to talk about exorcisms. We got some fantastic letters. Maybe we start there because we teased a letter from our fellow conspiracy realist, Moshe, and we didn't quite get to that letter, but we're going to make good on it now, right?
Yes. Yes. And just to update on those computer issues, Ben, almost as you finished speaking there, my computer made the Riverside recording happen and then it cut off. But we fooled you this time, Riverside, because I'm recording an audition. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Can't stop the signal.
That's right. So let's hear the message we were going to read last time from Moshe. Here it comes. Team stuff they don't want you to know. Comma. I recently finished listening to your episode regarding the Exorcist files, and I have to admit, I'm a little disappointed that Ryan didn't reach out to another community that also practices exorcisms, the Jewish community. That's right, conspiracy realists and hobbyists. The Jewish people also practice exorcisms, specifically casting out a type of malevolent spirit known as a dibbuk, or a dibbuk, D-Y-B-B-U-K. Yeah. Though at times, demons are also the perpetrators. Oh, those pesky demons. The practice can be traced back as far as King Solomon, makes sense, and is still used in the circles of the Orthodoxy, but widely hushed or laughed about by the modern conservative and reform movements of Judaism. Now, common knowledge would direct you to the 2012 film The Possession, which is allegedly based on a real-life object known as the Dybbuk Box, which was supposedly a Holocaust relic portable wine bar. It was passed off as an, quote, inspired by a true story, unquote, account of Jewish exorcism. However, the account was confessed to be a hoax by the original owner of said box. Well, that's kind of disappointing, everybody. All right, well, let's get back to it. Actual Jewish exorcism, though? Well, the Catholics had to get their ideas from somewhere. How would I know? Because I have personally witnessed such an event. Ooh, guys, get ready. Here it comes. Let me give you an overly simplified look at it. By my experience, a Jewish exorcism is performed in the presence of a minyan, or a prayer gathering of 10 or more men, using tools such as smoke or burning sulfur to tempt the spirit out, a tefillin, which, guys, this is a term I was unaware of until we got this message, so just quickly talk about what that is. Tefillin...
It's the string, right? Or like the thing that, goes around the belt?
They're these tiny black leather boxes.
That's right. Sorry. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, guys, I had no idea what this was. Tiny black leather boxes. They contain excerpts from Deuteronomy and Exodus written in Hebrew, like inside the box themselves. And then those boxes are attached to leather straps, which are wrapped around the body. And often one is placed like on the head, on the forehead somewhere. And another one is often placed on the arm. And that is to place them close to your mind, basically, and your heart. So when you pray, the word of God is close to your body.
If you are not familiar with this practice and you're a fan of film in the West, you may recognize the use of this or the appearance of this process in the film Pi.
Absolutely, Ben. That is a great example of where you can see these. Perfect. So let's go back to the message here from Moshe. Another thing that's used during an exorcism in this faith are blasts from a shofar. Just another term, make sure everybody knows what it is. A shofar is a musical ram's horn. And if you're a fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm and you've seen season 11, you've seen a hilarious cameo of a shofar in episode 4, The Watermelon. Fantastic episode. And back to the message. Also, passages are read from a Torah, and just the presence of a Torah is important. And even prayers and psalms that were found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Fascinating stuff. The Dybbuk or demon is then identified and the rabbi uses its name to command it out. That's very important. That goes back to King Solomon's stuff, the Lesser and the other keys of Solomon. It's all about identifying what, you know, creature is inside there, at least according to those who believe that there is an actual demon or Dybbuk or somebody in, you know, something possessing a person.
That's interesting if you think about like fairy tales too, like Rumpelstiltskin's all about like naming, you know, the name, having someone's name. It's almost like implied to give you power over the thing. I just think it just occurred to me that perhaps some of those tropes in literature and fables and stuff are pulled from this kind of, you know, culture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. Let's go back to the message here. In some schools of thought or philosophy of Kabbalah, if dealing with a Dybbuk, there may be an attempt to, quote, repair the broken spirit to make it pure and whole again. Fascinating stuff, the idea of repairing someone through that process, not just, you know, making an entity leave.
Right.
Back to the message. A Jewish exorcism is typically seen as successful if the rabbi and minyan witness bleeding from a fingernail or toenail, or if the spirit violently exits from the throat, the nether regions, like the sexual parts or the rectum, and the afflicted shows an immediate change in behavior. Fascinating. Continuing here, I should note Jewish exorcisms are not always successful, though I know very little of what happens in such an event. Anyhow, I thought you'd find it interesting that the practice of casting out evil spirits and demons isn't just limited to Catholics and Protestants. If you'd like to hear about my personal experience witnessing it, feel free to reach out. You can call me Moshe, should you choose to read this on air. L'chaim.
L'chaim. Yeah. Oh, this is awesome because we, you pointed this out in a previous listener mail segment, Matt. We spoke about several non-Christian, non-Judeo-Christian exorcism rites and things like exorcism in the Muslim faith, right? We talked about exorcisms in other parts of the world. This is a common practice. I just want to personally thank Moshe for bringing this to us and giving us the opportunity to talk a little bit more about this. This is something that is eternally fascinating. I'm thinking like the Screaming Girls of Malaysia episode. That research was crazy. I'm thinking about just all the different ways that people have pursued to cleanse themselves and others of unclean spirits in their cultures and communities. What was your initial reaction when you first read this letter?
Well, I received this message just as, you know, something that fascinated me, I guess, because I didn't know much at all about this topic of exorcism within Judaism. And I don't know, just wanted to learn more.
I mean, and I knew a little bit of this stuff. I certainly knew the concept of a Dybbuk, but the specifics, and I love the cultural specificity in ritual, because essentially, yeah, it is, you know, an exorcism by any other name, I guess, or whatever, like whatever you want to call it. It is ultimately just interacting with a foreign, malevolent spiritual being, right? And we know, I do believe we talked about it in the episode. This is in all kinds of other cultures, you know, and, you know, since the beginning of civilization, since the beginning of time, we've seen evidence of ritual, evidence of the belief in demonic spirits that need to be cast out, whether it be, you know, voodoo or what have you. There's any number of examples of this throughout, you know, the record that we have.
Yeah. Like it was 100%, like I was saying earlier in our previous explorations of this idea. Just like I said a second ago, we find every single culture, especially older cultures, will have some means of addressing spiritual malady. In some cases, like in very early cases, very early Buddhism, for instance, you'll see there's the idea of recitation of verses and holy scriptures to ward off or cleanse a place or person of danger or misfortune. So very much exorcism is not solely a Catholic thing. Pretty much any spiritual community has some version of that, which I think is fair to say.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll take a break, hear a word from our sponsor, and be right back with more messages from you.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back with another message from you. This one from you, Captain Proton. That's right, Captain Proton. And it's just a couple of links and a headline in the subject. Thieves steal $300,000 worth of trading cards at convention. And a link to that. And then another link to something that we'll talk about momentarily. So there's a link to this IGN article, lovely video game website that I've been enjoying for many years. Thieves steal $300,000 worth of trading cards from North America's largest board game convention. Apparently, this is a convention that was started by one of the creators of Dungeons and Dragons, which is kind of cool, right? And it's called Gen Con, and it is one of the biggest events in the industry. They were actually debuting a new Disney trading card game called Disney Lorcana. But unfortunately, that unveiling was not really what made the news. It was this heist. And I'll just read from this IGN article from Ryan Dinsdale. Quote, the alleged thieves reportedly acquired a pallet jack before removing a pallet of trading cards while vendors were setting up their Gen Con stalls. The Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department said the cards were moved to an unknown location and remain missing. And you can actually see some images, some surveillance images of these card thieves making the rounds. So the people are on the lookout. Let me see if I can find it. There's a version of it on The Verge. Yeah, the guy's name, by the way, was Gary Gygax. Gygax, an amazing name for a creator of Dungeons & Dragons. So this con has been running for a very long time, Gen Con in Indianapolis. And yeah, one of the guys looks to be wearing... it's not a cost. No, they're not in cosplay or anything. They're just kind of wearing kind of regular cool guy outfits, sunglasses. They got their little neck lanyards on with their, so they're obviously attendees. You got to wonder if it was just a crime of opportunity or if it was an inside job or what. And it looks like, so these are pallets, like shipping pallets. So it's a pretty hefty volume of cards. So it's not like they stole one that was worth, $100,000, which we know is a thing. This is like a serious stack of cards that were, like the kind you'd get shipped from a manufacturer. It is likely that there were some Magic the Gathering cards in there. I know that's your thing, Matt. Also Pokemon trading card game cards. And there was speculated that there were some of these Disney Lorcana cards, but Ravensburger, the company that makes this game, said that all of its product had been accounted for. And apparently that rollout did go quite well because, attendees waited around 16 hours for the cards to be released. And this was, like I said, a pre-release venue for this. So, look, I know this in and of itself isn't. We've just done kind of a slew of weird thefts in the last handful of months. We had, the subject of our recent word of the day, dentifrice. There was a theft of toothpaste, I believe, in Canada. We had some rare gems that were taken from a gem show or from a truck in transit to a gem show. That did kind of seem like a crime of opportunity because I think folks went into a gas station to use the restroom and maybe even take a shower. But this one's interesting, and it to me, it just kind of made me think of the idea of value, because I'm not a gamer in this way. I don't play tabletop games, and I'm not into the trading cards. But, Matt, you do often refer to this world as a bit of a money pit. Like, if it's something that you want to go all in on, you got to be willing to drop some bread, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess you put it this way, a pack of cards now, it's tough because Wizards has changed the way they price out cards because they have a bunch of different types of cards.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apologies. Yes. Slash Hasbro. They have way more expensive cards now, like collector's editions that are not your standard $5 for 15 cards that used to be kind of just what you would get, or, you know, between $4 and $5. And then Pokemon cards are very different because you only get 10 cards plus maybe an extra EX or whatever inside that pack for pretty much the same price. But those collector's ones are like $12 a pop for 15 cards. So almost $1 a card.
And that's the booster pack they're conventionally called.
Yeah. Or collectors or what they they have all kinds of different names now. I'm sure we'll get a message from Wayne out there, our favorite voicemail guy from Philly, officially.
Oh, you know what? Later in this week's listener mail segment, I've got a booster pack of the conspiracy magic cards. You want to open them on air later?
Heck yeah.
All right.
We need to do that on TikTok / the Gram Grams.
Oh, well, that's a good call. Maybe so. Maybe we'll reserve them.
I got a couple packs.
There you go. Well, there were a couple of other stories that were mentioned in this Verge article by Wes Davies. Apparently, earlier this year, in a store also in Indianapolis, I guess Indianapolis is like a gaming hub of some kind, in a suburb called Brownsburg, some folks broke into a gaming store, and then they threw around $15,000 worth of Magic cards into a pizza delivery bag. So for that had to have been stuff they were pulling, that maybe those like single cards that if you go into like a book exchange type place or like one of those stores, they'll have cards like in some sort of plastic like on their own. Those can be $100 for one of those, you know, if they're like collectibles or whatever. And that, so to fill up a pizza bag with 15 grand worth of product, those would have to be some pretty high value individual cards, I would think, right?
Yeah.
I like how we both the tabletop nerds went, yeah, you know, like you could hear us slapping the inside of our elbows, like, which cards were in that pizza bag? It's true, Noel, you're absolutely right. This is a huge industry. And if you think about it, you talked about the heist stuff we looked at earlier. We should also name check some of the laundering things we mentioned. And you started with such a beautiful question, what is value? Right. Not too long ago, a specific type of stuffed animal, the Beanie Baby, was huge. Right. Not too long ago, the NFT, just a digital concept, was huge. Value is outside of physical necessities. Value is largely a social concept. Right. So I would ask, how long do you see this immense valuation occurring for trading cards, like baseball cards? I haven't kept track of baseball cards in a long time, but those are still worth a lot of money, right?
I mean, I guess the market determines it, like what people are willing to pay. Or Matt, when we were off mic, you mentioned just, of course, this is, you know, the same as why shiny objects are expensive, because they're rare. And so the rarity just inherently imparts value. But Matt, we talked a little bit too about this something called a Black Lotus card. The artist, I think, that designed it, Chris Rush, there's like a signed copy of it that the pop artist Post Malone, who also did a fabulous turn as a voice actor in the new Ninja Turtles movie. He played for one of the weird little mutant creatures that hangs out with Superfly. But anyway, he paid, I think, $800,000 for a signed Black Lotus card, which is on what's called the reserve list, meaning that it's probably never going to be reprinted again. And then he recently, I think, spent around $2 million post on the One Ring card, which sounds to me like is that like a Lord of the Rings Magic the Gathering crossover? Or what
yes.
made this particular card special? Because I think it was something different about it, the one that he got.
Yeah, it's a set that was put out. I think it's called Tales of Middle Earth, and you could buy like boosters of it. And the whole allure of that specific card is that you could Oh, this is, sounds so nerdy. God, okay. Let's say you buy a pack of magic cards. You get 15 in there. You've got the Lord of the Rings set, right? There is only one rare card in that pack of cards. It can either be a 99-cent rare, like most of them. It can be a mythical rare, which is, you know, there are many fewer of those printed per set. So there's a much lower chance you're going to pull one of those. Or it can be one of these specialty versions of like a mythical rare or something. And in this case, there was, I think this is correct, guys. There was only one card that was printed in this specific fashion of this one mythical rare card.
Right. Yeah. I was talking with you about that off air. There are multiple iterations of what's called the One Ring in that new set. And they have the mechanic of it is making you invulnerable for one turn. And then you have something that represents the burden of carrying the One Ring. But out of all those rings or cards that were printed, there is one singular card, one off. There's no other card like it. It's actually the language on it is the same language, or it's made in the same language that the One Ring is made of in the, or that is inscribed on the actual One Ring in the Tolkien novels. And somebody found it. Somebody found it. It's like, it's even cooler than finding one of the golden tickets in Charlie and the Chocolate thing. Factory, because there's just one.
Pretty crazy. I mean, it goes with the name, you know, it is the One Ring. So yeah, this guy, Brooke Trafton, found it. Like you set it up beautifully, Matt. He found it in the pack, and it was, he called the shop where he got it from and asked them how he could verify it. And he said they actually initially hung up on him because they thought it was a prank. But once he verified it, he immediately put it in a safe deposit box, and then he got himself a lawyer. And this is essentially like a winning the lottery kind of situation. But the value of it, though, is only determined by who will pay that for it. Yeah, it's rare. Yeah, there's only one. But it's not of any value unless someone steps forward and pays for it. And apparently a meet and greet at a Post Malone show turned into him casually mentioning that he had this card, and Post asked what the current bid was, and he said, yeah, I'll take that.
Wow. You know, that's so awesome.
It's really cool. And again, Post Malone, I actually think some of his tunes are cool. And I like that he does these kind of rock and roll type covers too. And he's got a cool voice. And again, loved his voice acting in the Turtles movie. But he seems like a good hang. And he obviously has got more money than he knows what to do with. And why shouldn't he pay $2 million for a car? I ain't mad about it. You know, I get maybe a little mad. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, I think it's just tremendously cool because he has the means to change this person's life, That's the point. And he used that power to buy a magic card. I just wish I would have known pre Malone because he plays magic all the time, and I would have hung out with him for sure. But now that he's post, you know, I'm just intimidated.
Yeah, there's a related story on this BBC thing about how he helped some Glasgow singer pay for a deposit on his house. So it does seem like Post Malone is in the life-changing game to a degree, and that he uses his wealth for good in a lot of situations. And it's not necessarily just about wanting to have stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that one. I think that's probably a fine place to leave it. A little bit of a shorty, sort of a feel-good story. But yeah, value. It's ever elusive. And as we know, you know, like your point, Ben, I think absolutely on point. The NFT bubble has burst at this point. People are losing their Bored Apes left and right, or they're just tanking in value. And it's not that much different from like the stock market, or, you know, it's all about what the market will allow. And just capitalism in general is sort of like a little bit of a dice roll, especially with, you know, I don't know. There is a certain long-term balancing act that takes place. And certainly we cannot always expect that a magic card will hold that value. But these are cool stories, and it does make you think of kind of the nature of what is something worth. We're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, then come back with one more message from you. And by the way, thanks to Captain Proton.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, We've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we have returned. We're going to start with an answer to a question. And this is on me. I earlier asked why it seems that high-profile celebrity cases of crime seem to be solved so much more often and seem to have so much more attention put on them. And this is why we're grateful to our fellow conspiracy realist, because we can ask these questions. And so many of your fellow listeners are experts who do have answers. That's where I want to start tonight. We received a letter from someone who by necessity is anonymous, and we're going to share this with you, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. It starts this way. Greetings, gents. Longtime listener. I want to shed some perspective on why it seems like celebrities or high-profile cases seem to get more attention than normal. In the case of celebrities, like your Tupac reference, new leads and information are brought to light by books and shows. That is the main reason those cases seem to garner more investigative attention. It's not so much a preference as it is the information fed to investigators. More exposure of a case means more information for investigators to review. I hope this can restore some faith in law enforcement for you. Like most else, the bad seems to get the most attention, but the majority of us still want to make our communities a better place. This comes to us from a longtime military veteran, current LEO, law enforcement officer is the nomenclature, and asked to remain anonymous, due, of course, to privacy and safety concerns. But I wanted to stop there. Oh, they end by saying, can't wait to hear your take on the recent UAP Congress hearing, which we did an episode on. I want to stop there because I thought that was a pretty great explanation, right? Like we talked with people from Lava for Good, who pointed out that their investigations lead to exonerations and breaks in cases. So it's not so much an idea of, celebrity worship or something. It's just that more eyes are on the case, more minds are on a case because someone's a public figure. So you are more likely to discover things.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. I thought that was a positive way to look at it. Anyhow, we'd love to hear your thoughts, folks. I think that's a pretty plausible explanation, honestly, for a lot of this. And it doesn't solve the issue, which is clearly an issue, but it's good to know that there is an explanation. And it's good to know that there are people attempting to solve crimes. Now, of course, again, we're going to hold to the earlier point that people should be able to reasonably count on closure, especially if you are the survivor of a horrific tragedy or you lost someone close to you. We all want these cases solved. And hopefully justice is a gear that grinds slow but exceedingly fine, even here in 2023. So here's hoping, even if you or a loved one are not a celebrity, there will be justice when there is a crime committed against you.
Oh, yeah, hopefully. I have to mildly push back against the message. Okay. And it's only because I'm thinking about something like the Zodiac killer case. Okay, so there's been so much investigation that is not law enforcement based through media of all shapes and sizes and forms.
Private investigators, authors, etc.
And there's a ton of information headed to the police department. Just in the case of the monster show we made, we were attempting to interact directly with several police outfits in Benicia and Vallejo and in San Francisco, and attempting to we understood we couldn't take information from their active investigation, but there was no real communication. It was just, hey, no, we can't talk about any of this. It was a black box because it was still being investigated. So I don't understand how more stuff being brought to law enforcement's attention is actually going to change the factors very much of the investigation if the, you know, law enforcement isn't willing to chase down some of those leads. And often it's no individual's problem within, let's say, the San Francisco Police Department. They're at the Hall of Justice. They just don't have the staff to send on the wild goose chases that, you know, our and other productions were kind of stirring up in the debris of the bottom of the lake, Berryessa and all that stuff. Anyway, it's just, it's interesting to think about it that way. In hindsight, if you reopened a case, kind of how they did with the Atlanta child murders case, they're reopening many of those cases to look at them again and look at new evidence, re-examine old evidence. That's cool. That makes sense. I just don't see that happening very often.
Right. Like, this might not 100% explain the clear prevalence of public figures getting more investigation. Right. Like, I think both of those perspectives are valid. And it's true that there are clear discrepancies. Every LEO can say the same thing. There are clear discrepancies between the amount of crimes committed and the amount of crimes solved. And that that can lead to some egregious things like trying to close cases, getting people who are already locked up for life, like Henry Lee Lucas, to confess to crimes they could never have possibly committed just to close the books on something. And that, you know, folks like that might say they, you know, what's another murder? They might cop to that falsely just so they can get a couple amenities, right? There are a lot of intervening factors here. We just wanted to give some airtime to one explanation, and it's not a silver bullet explanation. It doesn't solve the problem, but we just heard from a person on the ground in the trenches who is saying they get supplied more information when there's a public figure. And Matt, what you're saying, I think, is equally valid, which is, hey, also, a lot of these non-LEO sources might be doing good reporting, good investigation, and then they sort of get stonewalled, right? They get dismissed in one way or another. Or what's that line? The don't want to talk about it line is something like, we do not comment on ongoing investigations.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah, I think there's more. Yeah, I don't think it's stonewalling on purpose, other than how can they trust the information coming from journalists, no matter who it is, and unless they put the time and effort and money into investigating it fully, right?
And those three resources might not exist to be applied there, right? But then also, yeah, you raise a great point, which is every time, not every time, but often when police or law enforcement release details about some, like the most horrific criminal you could imagine, ongoing suspected serial murderer, then they get a lot of prank calls, essentially, or a lot of calls or contact from unstable people, paranoid people, people who can't prove what's going on. They'll even have people cop to being the criminal just for what? Attention?
Yeah. I don't mean to go keep going back to those cases, guys, but the number of calls that came in to the APD and the task force during the Atlanta missing and murdered investigation of people who were like, yeah, I know Wayne Williams. He tried to abduct me in this very specific set of circumstances. Mm. And then investigators, once they get that tip, they have to investigate. They go in and it's complete BS. And we're talking hundreds of resources.
Yeah, what an awful thing to do to really just slow things down. And that's, I can see how it could make somebody very jaded.
Yeah, and how do you cut past the noise, especially when we're considering with those kind of investigations, even before they're reopened, there's a ticking clock, right? If there's a killer out there, then like you said, Matt, you can't say no to even the most cockamamie stuff. You have to give it at least a little bit of due diligence because you don't want to be the one who was asleep at the switch, right? So this is deep water. These are heavy stakes. And we appreciate this input because it's a dilemma. It's something that no one has 100% figured out a solution for. Unless you have one, we'd love to hear it. Stuff they don't want you to know. 1-833-STD-WYTK, conspiracydieheartradio.com. You know, if you got the answer, look, tell us and we will broadcast that to millions of people because we all need the help. Always like to end a little spoonful of sugar. So now here's something completely different. Now that we've just asked everybody to solve crime, just solve the idea of crime for us. Recently did an episode on strange billionaire hobbies and just thought as a fun little palate cleanser, we could read a couple of those billionaire hobby ideas. You guys down for that?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. So this one ended with asking for our fellow conspiracy realist, if you had specifically $1.8 billion, so not too many billions, $1.8 billion, what would be your weird hobbies or your weird pranks you would do? Do you guys want to hear the inspiring ones first, or you want to hear the funny ones first and the inspired ones after?
Ooh, can we do a mix?
Sure. Yeah, let's do a mix.
A blend?
Right. Yeah. So we've got one that says, I'll keep these anonymous in case these folks need to protect their ideas. Here's a funny one. Quote, I would sign people up with really obscure magazine subscriptions like Miniature Donkey Talk magazine or Girls and Corpses magazine. I signed a person up for a trial of Portable Restroom Operator magazine a few years ago. They're still getting it today and still have absolutely no idea why they are getting it. I even changed the address they had on file when he moved, and his response was, they keep finding me. So using millions of dollars to sign a bunch of people up for random magazine subscriptions.
That's just mischievous, if you ask me. And the funny thing there is, I mean, don't people just kind of get random magazines periodically anyway without even having to do anything?
Periodically.
Oh, goodness my gracious. Yeah, occasionally I'll just get free copies of Esquire, and I'm like, can you please stop sending me these? I'm not paying for them, but just please stop. I just feel like it's wasteful. I mean, I do recycle them, but.
Well, good on you for recycling them. What do you think, Matt? Would that pass your billionaire prank threshold?
No. I want to hear the next one. This one does not pass.
Okay.
I'm just joking. No, it's pretty good.
That was pretty good. Okay. Let's see. Another person says, My billionaire hobby would be to feed, house, and educate people. These are probably ideas I got from you. I live in the St. Louis, Missouri area where there are food deserts. I would open small stores with fresh food. I know this food goes bad, so we'd give away what doesn't sell. There are lots of vacant properties in my city that could be fixed up or built on. I would buy and rehab these places with sustainable technology. I would sell these homes to people renting smaller rundown places. I would fix up rundown apartments and hotels to house all the homeless.
If only Zuck and Elon thought like that, you know, and that's a great plan. And when I hear this kind of stuff, all I can think of is just these freaking idiots arguing about having an MMA fight in Vegas and how now, because it's just become so embarrassing, like, oh, but it'll be for charity. But it's like, well, maybe just like do charity. Why does it have to be about your stupid egos? It's just, and I guess the sad thing is like, people would just say, well, this is just, it's just not done. You know, it's not sustainable. You know what I mean? Yeah, I've got all this money, but I would be setting a weird precedent if I did something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
it's cowardly. You know, I just don't think anyone should have that much money and be allowed to just have all that. You know, I mean, when there's so many people that for no reason of anything they did are just suffering and living in squalor and in difficult situations. It's a system that's designed to cause people to fail.
And it's strange that acknowledging that fact may make some part of the population look at us as extremist partisans or radicals. We are being objective with that. And anybody who is interested, anybody who's a proponent of trickle-down economy, you might be interested in its original name, which was the horse and sparrow economy. Don't feed all the animals in town. Feed the horses. And if they eat enough, they'll poop out something of value, and the sparrows can eat the poop.
Or that the crumbs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's you're right. And I'm not some kind of, none of us, I think, are radical liberals of any stripe or social, proposing any kind of socialism or whatever necessarily. I don't know. Some forms of it, it does seem there are some not horrible ideas, but it's just rampant, unchecked capitalism. I don't think anyone would argue is a great, awesome idea. Maybe some people would argue that, but I think they'd be missing the point.
Well, Ayn Rand would, but she's terrible. So there's one more. Let's do one more fun one. Okay. Quote, I would hire a troop of professional clowns to stalk at a distance people like my younger brother and a couple others. They would stalk. But what of those things where you don't actively see them? You might notice them out of the corner of your eye or a few rows back at a grocery store. Once in a while, they make eye contact and do that little kid finger wave at you and disappear. $1.8 billion. That's your choice, man.
I do one of those the game type scenarios, mm-hmm. You know, just create an elaborate ruse just for one individual's benefit or mm-hmm.
Truman Show it.
Yeah, Truman Show. Something like that. Just go over the top. Go absolutely ham with the most elaborate prank you could ever imagine.
Matt, you got a billionaire prank? I approve of yours, though. I think that's great.
Thank you.
I really like.
I would buy a single magic card.
Yes, right.
That's my
from
dream.
Post Malone. Yeah. I'll take it now.
Yes. My billionaire hobby is not Magic the Gathering. My billionaire hobby is this one magic card.
Yeah. Well, why's my billionaire hobby got to be different from my thousandaire hobby?
Right. Yeah. Know your roots, man. I respect mm-hmm. that.
No, you know what I'd do if I had that much money? I would buy Magic the Gathering from Wizards of the Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I would make it half price, not be, you know, publicly traded or anything like that, so I don't have any shareholders, and operate at a loss until all the money is gone, so that everybody could just play Magic the Gathering for an affordable price.
It's not about the money. It's about sending a message. I fucking love you, dude.
Matt, I want to double back to something that I kind of missed in that segment. When we're talking about value, are these high-priced cards used in play? Are they used in tournament play, or are there some of them that are so overpower something that they're not even like allowed, that it's more about the collector's market.
Black
or is it
Lotus
about
is not tournament tournament legal.
Right. And also, if you want people to just play the game, isn't there an online version of the game that you can play for not a bunch of money?
Yes to all of the above. If you want to play with a Black Lotus, you can in certain tournaments if you're just playing with friends. If you want to play in historical battles, you can use some of the other cards that are banned in other formats. If you're playing standard, then you can only play with the last like six versions of the cards, the six sets. If you're playing Commander, sorry, there's lots of rules.
You can play MTG Arena.
Arena is the online version,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And speaking of, let's end it this way. Let's end our listener segment this way. I have here a booster pack of something called Kamigawa Neon Dynasty Magic. Is that any good? Is that a good one?
Yeah, it's got great art. If it's one of the collector's versions, some of the art cards.
I just lost us millions of dollars because I'm opening it.
Oh, no. Right?
Oh, gosh. What do we got? Oh, wow. This art is pretty good. Can you guys see this?
Yeah, it's dope.
Yeah. Oh, I like the shiny one.
This one?
Is that the shiny one? Yeah. That one's got to be more valuable, right?
I think this is just straight up art.
Yeah, yeah. That one's not valuable at all. It's just awesome.
Matt, don't let Noel and I embarrass you here. I'm going to send you guys this on a... Yeah. Let's see, we got
find
some
the one that has a gold symbol. Or
the rest of them
are
nearly as shiny.
Yeah.
I like those. I go by magpie rules, y'all.
Oh, we got this one. Moon Circuit Hacker. It's kind of shiny.
Nice. What's the color of the symbol on the middle right-hand side?
Middle right. Oh, you're asking me colors? The show is over. You guys know I can't.
It's either black, silver, or gold.
Okay. Well, I will hit us up in the group text or the next time we hang out. But as always, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We can't wait to hear from you. Big, big thanks to Anon. Big, big thanks to our billionaire hobbyist of the future, to Moshe, of course. And big, big thanks to Captain Proton. Folks, you're our favorite part of the show, as we always say at the beginning and the end. We can't wait to hear from you. So picture us like a way cooler version of that Uncle Sam propaganda poster. We want you to be part of the conspiracy. Find us online.
That's right. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
We have a voicemail system. You can call it and we will hear your voice. Call 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your voice and message on one of these listener mail episodes. If you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes you got, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. If tonight's movie night is just what you need, make it special with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.